This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Bob Maurer. Bob is with Manduca Trading in Chicago. We're breaking down the markets as we start a new year, and that conversation coming up in just a moment. Speaking of markets, the Vice President for Global Education at StoneX is Jared Morgan.
I don't have to remind farmers that they're investing a tremendous amount of capital into that growing crop every year. And there is a huge risk that they're not going to be able to turn that crop into enough cash to cover all of those expenses. So by hedging that commodity when the opportunity presents itself, we can manage cash flows, we can sleep easier at night, and you can know that you're going to generate the revenue needed to produce again another year.
It's the Agribusiness Report. It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. Bob, first off, Happy New Year. Here we go. Monday, the second trading day for the new year. But how about we stop and just look back quickly at 2025?
Yeah, we are officially in the first full week of trading for the commodity futures markets here in 2026. And quickly just looking back in 2025, I think, in my opinion, it was the tale of three markets. We had the wheat futures, which started out, you know, in an upper price range and then just slid throughout the remainder of the year right into just the other day to making new lows. So the wheat market has definitely been the weakest of the three, that being corn, wheat, and soybeans, and consistently seems to be so. We'll talk about some of the factors that are affecting each one of these more currently here in just a moment, but diving back to 2025 in corn futures basis, the market, similar story in a way to wheat, in as much as it started up at a higher range throughout about the first 4 or 5 months in 2025, and then dipped into a pretty good slide into about August, as it certainly seemed like the crop was going to be made here in the United States. And then we did see some kind of rally, and pretty much it's been a sideways move since then. So we basically saw a higher price level, a slide, and then a bit of a recovery out of the lows made back in August, in more of a sideways range at the moment. Soybeans, on the other hand, contrary to corn and wheat, was pretty much in a range all year. I'd say from January through September, pretty much a sideways action basis of the March contract. And then we did see a decent rally breaking out of the top end of the range. This was based on looking back the likelihood of a framework for China to do business and start purchasing U.S. soybeans again. But really, the market has not sustained those gains. So it was more of a buy the rumor, sell the fact scenario. And even though it's real, it's just basically the price is telling me that the markets just don't think it's enough to really sustain the rally that we had hoped we would be able to do in the soybean complex. So basically, we broke right back into almost nearly the bottom end of the range that we had traded in, that is, all the way through about mid-September. So interesting scenario throughout 2025, and we'll see how that plays into 2026. Obviously, any business is good business, but if we break it down into some of the main things that are impacting each one of those markets, for the corn market, it's really, I think, balance between what's been evolving as really strong export demand, and I would say that the ending stocks at this point here in the United States still seem a bit comfortable. So you got strong export demand helping provide a bit of a tailwind, but you've also got comfortable U.S. ending stocks, which basically is on the supply side, and that tends to put a bit of a damper on prices. We'll see how that plays out. Weather in South America, super important. We're going to keep an eye on that along with the January 12 USDA reports. We'll talk about that in a moment. Ethanol demand is steady. Feed usage looks pretty firm. Global supply remains pretty much more than adequate, though. So we've got some nice bullish side equation things, and we've got some things that we have to contend with on the bear side. So those bear side things are helping keep rallies contained, basically making it, until a demand shock emerges. Let's put it that way. For the wheat market, it remains under pressure. plenty of global supply and relatively weak U.S. export demand. And again, a couple of the contracts made new lows just last week. However, you know, the one thing that might help the wheat market stabilize some is that you've got those oversold technicals. So a lot of traders watch whether or not something is getting to an extreme level, either on the high side or the low side. So you might see some kind of recovery bounce. We'll see if that plays into the marketplace. And then also, at this point, there's not much of any kind of risk premium due to weather, such as winter kill. So if the weather does turn ugly in one way, shape, or form, perhaps we're going to get some kind of push to the upside in prices from that. And then as for soybeans, generally speaking, I think majorly at this point, it's fundamentally pressured by relatively weak U.S. export demand, especially from China, as I mentioned earlier. And we've also got what looks to be rather broadly favorable South American crop prospects at this time. So we're not getting the demand we need right now in terms of the export sales. And we know that around the corner, if things stay conducive down in South America, that there's going to be plenty of supply coming out of there, which is going to be hard to contend with. Crush margins are still supportive. But as reported recently, still relatively high soybean oil stocks and, let's say, softer than expected biofuel demand. They're weighing on sentiment, so that puts a bit of a damper on things. And we would basically be thinking at this point that any kind of major rally likely would require either a more meaningful South American weather threat or some sort of a surge in Chinese purchasing. So we'll see how that all plays out. I know we've got the context of what happened last year in terms of either price declines that kept going lower, as in wheat, price declines that had some kind of recovery and have hit some kind of stable range, such as corn. And then we had the soybean story, which was mostly sideways in 2025, had the rally, didn't hold, retreated towards the bottom end of the range. And now it's going to be a wait and see game to see what evolves there. If we dig into the details just a bit of a couple of these commodities, one being corn. Again, that Jan 12 USDA report is going to be really important. It's going to be highly anticipated. Slightly downward revision to U.S. corn yields is what I believe is expected at this point. U.S. ending stocks are important. They continue to hover around 2 billion bushels or so, keeping the stocks-to-use ratio around 12.5%. It's not necessarily bullish, but it's also not, in my opinion, demand destructive. If we look at wheat, I think the primary driver right now that could help it is the weather conditions U.S. and abroad. Again, there's no major winter kill risk currently expected for U.S. winter wheat. Plains conditions remain warmer than normal. And at this point, you know, you get the whole polar vortex thing. I don't think there's much of an expectation for a polar air intrusion forecast over the next couple of weeks or so. So I don't think that's going to be much of a play, but we'll keep an eye on it because if it does change, that could change the sentiment pretty quick. In terms of soybeans, again, South America is a formidable competitor. We've got the Brazilian crop outlook. It looks generally favorably overall. The Argentina situation is mixed. You got southern areas that are dry now, but rain chances are improving in the extended forecast. And again, you know, it's just that potential of rather large available supply coming into the world marketplace if things evolve, you know, conducively down there. So that's where we're at. A big picture look at what happened in 2025. We'll see how things evolve over the next couple few weeks, see if it gives us any kind of indication of what we might expect in 2026. And then also we've got the all-important USDA report coming out on Jan 12th, so it'll be a week from today.
We're talking with Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading in Chicago. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members, our strength. strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. Okay, Bob, let's look at 2026 now. We looked at 2025 earlier. Let's look at some of the fundamentals setting up for this year.
We're following up kind of the same path as when we talked about the grains and oil seeds. If we look back at 2025 real quick for the live cattle futures, we saw a significant rally, right, that really was an outstanding move relative to those who've watched the cattle markets of late. And that topped off roundabout when the administration started talking about extra supply potentially coming into the United States in one way, shape, or form. Could have been through some kind of tariff reduction, tariff adjustments, perhaps also at the same time, things looked like they were warming up in terms of being able to once again see some kind of feeder cattle supply out of Mexico. And that really drove the market down for about a 6 to 7 week window. And then, since about mid-November, the market's been able to recover a good chunk of that slide. And it doesn't matter whether you're looking at the live cattle futures or the feeder cattle, it's about the same. Hogs, in a way, followed the same pattern. They didn't maybe have the significant rally that live cattle and feeder cattle did. Exactly, but they did see buoyant pricing, and then all of a sudden the slide started happening around the same window. So it was big liquidation in the protein complex. But here we are. So what's driving the market right now? I would say key for the cattle, tight U.S. supplies on the bullish side of the equation, stronger cash trade recently. The risk that screwworm-related biosecurity controls delay Mexican cattle imports are tangible. The firm box beef values have been helping. Technical breakout pretty much has been helping also for the technicians out there. Again, you kind of get the overbought people who might be the counter trend, but I'm not so concerned about that at the moment. And then in terms of hogs, the bottom line there, in my opinion, on the bullish side of the equation, you've got limited supply growth. You've got the firm cutout values, steady export demand, especially into Latin America. And overall, I'd say the tone is fundamentally supportive for hogs, maybe tactically cautious, but still fundamentally supportive. And to that point, the quarterly hogs and pigs report that came out a couple weeks ago basically indicated that the breeding herd was not really expanding, productivity trending pretty much near normal. Market hog inventories were modestly higher in the heavier weight groups, but really, in my opinion, not enough to materially pressure the market near term. And overall, this keeps that supply growth constrained compared to some of the past cycles. So we'll see how that plays out over the next couple few weeks when we'll get that USDA report on the grains and the oilseeds, and being that those are inputs for the cattle and hog markets, we'll see if there's any kind of reaction from that.
It's Bob Maurer with Manduca Trading on the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turn roads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago. Bob, contact info. How do we get in touch with you?
Sure. Contact information. You can pick up the phone. Give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053 or reach out via email at bmaurer@manducatrading.com or come visit our website at www.myfuturesadvisor.com and you can reach out that way also.
Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
For crop producers,
margins have narrowed really rapidly over the last couple of years, and I think that that's put a lot of stress on the crop side of the balance for farm income.
Due to a combination of factors, according to former Agriculture Department Chief Economist Seth Meyer, this led USDA to introduce various ad hoc assistance programs for row crop growers in 2025, including...
Into the coming year, we're talking about bridge payments, which I think the Secretary has described as a method to get us to the safety net programs of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, ARC and PLC payments in the fall.
Meyer says such payments need to be factored in by producers in 2026 when it comes to
their overall bottom line and cash flow,
along with the usual considerations such as inputs, weather, and demand for whatever commodity producers choose to plant. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.